This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Pedlin Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is February 28th, 2018. Welcome to Bicycle Talk this week with my co-host, the lovely Fran Storch.
Hi.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can either call or text us at 860-486-9487 while we're on the air, or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can also visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you'd like to contribute to the show or be on as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Beginning with Ron's rant of the week. Obviously, we have a lot of political things going on out there that are rather interesting. One that has been in the news lately has been a situation with gun violence. And here it is. I'm going there. I know I'm crossing a line here. There is a piece on Facebook that you can look at under the Bicycle Talk on the Bicycle Talk listing on Facebook. You're welcome to, I'm welcome to all opinions on this, but something that we should probably take a look at here is political views and products purchased in the bicycle industry and how they relate to what's going on in our times. So there is, this comes directly from bikeportland.org. That would be Portland, Oregon. And they have an article that is on their website, and it says, local bike shops come to terms with their industry ties to the NRA. So anyway, there's a bike shop called Selwood Cycle Repair, and it will support a boycott of Vista Outdoor. Now, Vista Outdoor is a company that owns a number of products that are sold in the bicycle industry. They are, they have Bell Helmets, Giro Helmets, Blackburn, and Copilot, just to name a few of them. And the reason why they are not real big about this particular vendor is because they are one of the largest, America's largest sellers of assault weapon ammunition and accessories. And they are also a staunch supporter of the NRA. Now, with all of these things that are going on with, there's a lot of national attention right now at the NRA. And whether or not, you know, there are some companies that are like major rental car companies are no longer giving discounts to with your NRA card, which is kind of interesting. There's a lot of things going on. I just got a text this morning from someone. Very interesting. There's a large sporting goods chain called Dick's Sporting Goods. And Dick's Sporting Goods is all over the Northeast. Actually, I think they go all the way out as far as Chicago now. I think they're spread all the way out into the Midwest now. They are no longer going to be selling assault rifles. They're done. So this is becoming something that people are looking at. So the company that we're talking about is just Vista Outdoor, is someone who is selling products to bicycle shops. Bell Sports, Giro, Blackburn Design, Camelback, Resgultz, I don't know what that is, and Copilot. So this is kind of an interesting thing because I'm now seeing quotes like this. This is from Lee Benson at Gladys Bikes. We will no longer purchase products from companies owned by Vista Outdoors. We will be donating proceeds from the remaining inventory we have of Giro helmets to Everytown for gun safety. Wow. How about that? So there's some statements being made here. Yes, the little tiny bicycle industry, those of us who love bicycles and ride them, making a little bit of a statement about this. Now, I understand if you are a supporter of the NRA and you are a supporter of the Second Amendment, which, I mean, we should support all our amendments, but maybe we need to redefine them a little bit. But anyway, we should support them all. If you are that way, then I completely understand. I completely understand your point of view on this. But I do find that, you know, most people, and I'm just going to, this is a kind of a general statement that I'm making, but most people in the bicycle industry tend to be a little bit, we're not as, how can I say we're not as violent? I don't know. I don't know exactly how to put that out there, but we tend to be a little more neutral in with subjects like this right here. So
we're more interested in riding our bikes.
We're more interested in riding our bikes. We're more interested in saving our planet. We're more interested in keeping our fitness up. There's a lot of things that work with being a bicycle-oriented person or a bicycle advocate that are not as concentrated on stocking up on assault weapons.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're going to be using assault weapon, presumably you like to shoot. And if you're going to shoot, you're going to be practicing shooting. And I don't want to practice shooting. I want to go ride my bike.
Well, exactly. And I don't have a problem with people practicing shooting.
Me neither.
I grew up learning how to shoot correctly. And I was taught by not just anyone. I was taught by someone who was a certified NRA instructor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what? Fine. That's good. I'm really good with that. I really am. But we do have a problem, and we have a real issue here in the state of Connecticut because we have something that's still near and dear to our hearts here. We had an issue within our state a number of years ago, which gained national attention, as these things do. And, you know, some of those kids are now moving into high school.
Right.
That, or if they were brothers or sisters
of older siblings,
They have older siblings that are now becoming more in the level of let's pay attention here, senators, congressmen, all you political types, voting age. Listen to that, voting age. If that does not inform you enough to make you think that you might want to pay closer attention to this, I don't know what
I think the kids, the survivors are, the children were in around age 6 or so. They were 6 or 7 years old.
They were.
It was
yes.
6 years ago, so they're 12 and 13 now.
Right.
So they're in middle school. Some of them, they'll be entering high school in the next couple of years.
Right.
But yes, you're right. They'll have older siblings who are in high school.
And 4 years from then, they will be getting rapidly approaching voting age for a presidential election. So,
that's right.
I mean, there's obviously a situation here which needs to be attended to.
I have a dear friend who lives in New Jersey, and she's more, if you would, pro-gun than I am. And she's and she'll talk to me about, they're trying to the Second Amendment and all that. And I'm like, look, you know what? I'm from Connecticut. Don't even talk to me.
Yeah, it's a sore subject, and even Florida has they have started looking. They're looking at introducing new legislation into their laws because of what just happened there. It really doesn't have the same impact on people until it happens in your backyard.
Yeah,
and when it happens in your backyard, you begin to look at things from a much different direction, a different viewpoint for sure. So, you know, these are things that they're in the news. We're talking about it. It's out there.
Well, the thing that's so different about this one was when we had the horrible shooting in Sandy Hook in Newtown, they were little kids. The kids couldn't really speak for themselves. I mean, because they're just not of age where they can get up at a microphone and talk about what happened to them. This time it hit teenagers. Mm-hmm. And smart teenagers who can put thoughts together, and they in fact, very, very intelligent teenagers, and they have a voice, and they're using it, and they're not afraid to use it, and it's amazing because they have nothing to lose.
Yeah, they have a loud voice. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. They have nothing to lose.
Nothing
it's
to
not
lose.
Like they're
not
going
looking
to lose their job over it. They're not going to because they don't work yet.
No.
They're not going to lose their position or status within society over it because they're not there yet. They're still young. So there's a lot of things going on there, which, you know.
And they're very willing to speak, and they're willing to, you know, stand in the face of legislators and saying this is how we feel. And there was a town meeting with Marco Rubio, and they called him out, and they said, you tell me that you're going to make some changes. And they're unafraid to get up in their faces and say what's what. It's pretty amazing.
It really doesn't matter to them other than the fact that they really need their point across.
Right.
So I did, you know, set this out and onto the Bicycle Talk page so that, you know, people can comment on it if they wish. I got a comment from Billy who said that, who listens to us all the time. He says a lot of bike shops are cutting them out. And, you know, the Belgiro thing has been an issue over the years anyway, because sometimes there's other product out there, basically, is what it comes down to. And there's a lot of times that some of these companies force upon the retailers their way of wanting to do business, and the retailer says, no, we're not going to do that. So these are definitely things. Billy has a piece here, some feedback from his friend, and wasn't aware of the connection, but it doesn't surprise her. Trying to put social responsibility investment portfolio together, start filtering for no fossil fuels, no alcohol, or no weapons or arguments. Or weapons or armaments, I'm sorry, companies that will, you know, somehow be influencing their buying decisions. So, you know, people are already starting to look at this, and they're looking at their investment decisions, and we have a caller. And, yes, caller.
Hey, Ron, it's Bruce.
Hey, Bruce.
Hey, you know, I have an interest in this whole issue of violence via firearm.
Mm-hmm. And I know, I understand that, because I know that there are people out there that own firearms, and I have no problem with that at all. But go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. No. It's kind of interesting to me, because I think my perspective, sometimes it's hard for me to articulate it, because people jump to conclusions on one side or the other. You know, people are very, very polarized on this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And my position is sort of like trying to parse all the stuff and get to what is actually true, so that we, and I do believe we need change in our gun control, you know, laws.
Absolutely.
But I really want it to be done in such a way that it has the maximum effectiveness that it can possibly have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I like you, was trained by the NRA probably when I was, 14 or 15 years old, in hunter safety, and that's like a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the NRA was a very positive organization, and it did a lot of good things for people who were going to handle firearms. You know, currently, I see them in a whole different way, and I think the evolution of the NRA has become one of these kind of like political slash extremist views.
Yeah, well, I think it's unfortunate what's happened to the NRA, because I think the NRA has been put in a position where, you know, some money came in and some opportunity came in, and it's really kind of transformed their original agenda and how they were set up, because they were not set up in any way to be the organization that they are today.
Yes. I would agree with that, but one of the things that gets lost in this whole discussion, and I wanted to just say this today, is, you know, there are about 30,000 firearm deaths a year in the United
mm-hmm.
States.
Oh, yeah.
And about 19,000 of them, which roughly equates to about 65%, are suicides.
Right. Absolutely.
And those suicides, there are a lot of people who have mental illness and, you know, suicidal tendencies, and
mm-hmm.
we don't do enough in society to offer, you know, some sort of assistance to those people. I don't know if people know this, but 15% of the deaths are attributed to police in the line of work.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a whole number of, you know, deaths attributed to various things like accidents. 1% of the deaths in this country with firearms is attributed to rifles, other than you know, your hunting rifle or your shotgun. So assault rifles, what they call assault rifles.
Right.
So it's 1%. So you're talking about roughly 300 deaths a year. Now, I don't have an assault rifle. I have a couple Glocks,
mm-hmm.
But I don't care whether they're legal or not. I'm skeptical about the effectiveness of a ban, but I don't care. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if that's what society mm-hmm. wants, that's fine, because we certainly have to try something.
Sure.
But I will say this. We are ignoring the deaths in the inner cities. And there are four cities, and I remember, I'm pretty sure Chicago and St. Louis and Baltimore, and I forget the fourth one, are the four cities where there's an amazing percentage of deaths because of firearms, and that's all about what's happening in society today. But our politicians, for a variety of reasons, are not looking at that. I think some of it is racism. I think some of it is, you know, classism in the sense of, well, there's a lot of poor people that get killed in the cities, and you know what, you know, they deserve what they put themselves into, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what really bothers me is that I do believe we will have a ban on the so-called assault weapons, which is fine. But I'm concerned that what we as society are going to do is to ignore all the rest of it. And it's all the rest of it that's 99% of the 30,000 deaths a year.
Oh,
and
yeah. There's a lot of social responsibility here, which is being, you know, bypassed. And I think that's really what it comes down to. I mean, you think about, you know, social responsibility would go back to, let's go back to those inner cities. You take a look at the inner cities. The inner cities have a lot of poor people that are in there. Is that because of the fact that, is that a social responsibility? It's not a social responsibility. What is it? How does that happen? How does it made that we have these really poor places and then these really rich places and rich people and all white neighborhoods and all black neighborhoods? And how is it that one has more crime than the other one does? That may be a social issue. There's just a lot of factors. You're right. It's a huge picture. I mean, it's an enormous can of worms. You know, I just thought that I would bring it up on the show just because of the fact that there are some companies that are within the industry that are selling products that are, you know, not related in any way to firearms, and yet they're very, very strong. They have a very strong bottom line in the firearms industry. So it's interesting that people are using their checkbooks to send a message, and that's basically it.
I'm one of them, Ron. Mm-hmm. I'm one of them in the sense that I think that the NRA has gotten so out of control in terms of its political agenda that while there may be a couple things that they espouse that I would agree with, and believe me, if there are some, it's a couple, I am disgusted with their influence on the whole societal debate. And I am really upset with the companies that support them for a variety of reasons. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I bought a Giro helmet, and I was thinking about buying another one. I happen to really like this helmet. And
I love them. I love the way they fit. They feel good. There's nothing wrong with them at all. I like them a lot.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And I will be now shopping for, you know, Cask or something like else, you know, because I'm just not going to support them, and I'm just not going to support, you know, via them, the NRA. I just think they're out of control.
And, you know, we're a little industry. You know, the bicycle people, bicycle people in this country, we may not make a big difference. But when it starts rolling over into other avenues and other interests, and now all of a sudden people start using their checkbook to vote with, that makes a difference. People do pay attention. Companies do pay attention when they see that. So, you know, it just brings up a great discussion is what it does.
Well, it does. And the most encouraging part of this, and then I'm going to let you go, but the most encouraging part of this, I don't know if you know this, but the indigenous people in South America and in North America, they keep talking about the return of the rainbow children. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing kids that are so enlightened for whatever reason, that I really do believe they're going to make a difference, and I really do believe that there are some of us, I think a lot of us who are adults who are going to be supportive of them, and I really see this whole thing as the beginning of a big changes in society, not just limited to firearms.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Okay. The women's movement, everything that's going on
now,
there's just so many good things. Well, I think good things. Obviously, others don't. But, you know, in my opinion, I see a lot of good things that are happening right now just because of the radical behavior of our political nature right now.
Yeah, our
that's the most political way I can put that.
Taken over by corporations and money.
Right,
And that's got to stop. So.
Exactly.
Anyway, I'll
hey, Bruce,
know,
thanks
thank
a lot
much.
For your input. I really appreciate it, and thanks for listening.
All right.
All right,
you,
cool.
You,
Take
friend.
Care.
Take care.
All right. So that makes for some discussion. And I knew we would get some discussion out of this because it's true. You know, take a look at it's just a simple thing. You can look at what you're buying and what it support, what else that company, particular company may support. And it's a, it's something to take a look at. Are you or will you be socially conscious about how you make your purchases? Very interesting. I'd love to hear more comments. You can address it on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page if you wish. On a positive side, moving forward from this, the UConn cycling team is having a race. Yes, UConn cycling right here on campus. Yay, right here at the University of Connecticut. I will have a representative from the team on the air with us next week. We're very, very excited by this because we have not had a bicycle race in the town of Mansfield since, let me think hard on this. Boy, it's going to go back to maybe my early days of promoting racing because I did have a race.
You mean a road race?
I'm talking about a road race, a bicycle road race.
As opposed to that race you got on your sweatshirt there.
As opposed to that, right. Then there's a cyclocross race. That's another story. Right. This is a road race, a race on the road. And there will also be a time trial. And the time trial will use the old course, which I used to use back in the day when Rainbow Cycle was in existence. And it will also use, I believe, Codfish Falls Road, too. But we'll talk more about this with a representative from the UConn cycling team next week. I believe Nick is coming online with us. I've had some conversation with him, and he will be here next week. So we'll talk all about the UConn cycling team and about the race that's coming up March 24th through the 25th. And so anyway, this is really exciting stuff, and I just wanted to mention it on the positive side, and we will talk more about it next week. On the Maintenance Minute, we're not just going to reserve this for bicycle maintenance like hardware-type issues here. Today I wanted to talk a little bit about, because of the time of year it is, because we are up here in the Northeast, and we are in a position of changing weather all the time, I wanted to talk a little bit about base layers. And Fran can give us some input on this because I know she loves her base layers. And there's good reasons why. There's definitely good reasons why. Okay, so if you're not aware of what a base layer is simply we're going to make it as simple as possible. Consider it, think of it like an undershirt. Okay, something that you would wear, an undergarment that you would wear underneath your regular cycling wear or other layers that you might carry with
you. Yes, one of those
you.
Things you put on to help you feel like the Michelin man when you're on your bike.
Right, right. So a base layer, which we'll call for this particular time, we'll call it an undershirt, and it's typically a good base layer. It'll be made out of a high-tech synthetic fabric or out of wool. And it's designed to wick sweat away from your body. And what this does for you is it does two things. First of all, it keeps that moisture away from your body so you don't get chilled, which is very, very nice. It'll also work really well if you use a very, very thin one in the summertime to wick that moisture away. It keeps you more comfortable and cooler when you're riding in the summertime. So,
yeah, I'm not wearing a base layer when it's 80 degrees out.
Yeah, I have a base layer that I like to wear when it's 80 degrees out. And it's a sleeveless piece, and it's very, very thin, and it really does feel a lot better. And if you watch bicycle racing at the level that I do, you'll often see a rider zip down their jersey, and when they do, you'll note that they have something on underneath, and it's like a 90-degree day, and you're going, what is that person doing? And that person's wearing a base layer because they're more comfortable by wicking the moisture out.
Yeah, 5% body fat.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a thing. So base layers are really important. So when do you wear a base layer? Well, you'd wear it this time of year when the cold or changing weather conditions are out there, and you also might wear a base layer on a wet day. So if there's a possibility of rain coming or some moisture, it'll help keep you a little bit warmer if you wear that base layer. So, you know, cold days, hot days, summer, winter, training rides, races, road, mountain, whatever. There's no real argument as to when you should wear your base layer.
I feel like I made a mistake yesterday because it was hovering right around the high 40s, low 50s mark. And yesterday I chose to go out in a heavy base layer, a heavy jersey, a heavy fleece jersey, and a vest. Because the sun was really bright, and I thought, oh, I'll be warm enough. But I hadn't counted on it being as windy as it was. This is the time of year where it's really hard to know quite how to dress. I would have done better if I was concerned about being too warm. What I should have done, I could have gone a little thinner on the jersey or the base layer and worn a windbreaker, worn a jacket.
So one of my recommendations to people is, you know, we talk about, you know, if you're going out for a bicycle ride and you're going out on the road or on your mountain bike and you're going for a ride, you carry a spare tube and a set of tire levers with you, right? Just in case you get a flat, and a pump, of course, just in case you get a flat. Mm-hmm. So you can repair that. One of the other essentials that I think is really, really important, they make some incredible ultra-thin, crumple it up the size of a fist jackets that you could just plop into the back of your, you could put it in your bag or you could put it in your back pocket on your jersey. And it's just sometimes you'll get, you know, partway into a ride like that and you'll go, you know, I'm a little chilly. You pull that out and everything gets a lot more comfortable.
Yeah. So I would have done better to have three thin layers than to have two thick layers because that way I have two layers of air, just air, that can get warmed up. And instead of one, that's what I really needed. And, of course, the windbreaker is always nice. I mean, windbreakers are just that. They break the wind.
They break the wind. They take that cutting edge of wind out and take that little chill off of you. So base layers keep you warm in the cold weather. Okay, that's the most popular reason to have one on right now. And you can wear a base layer in cold weather to help keep you warm. And it does this in a couple of ways. First, the base layer provides an extra layer of insulation. Second, it will wick the sweat away from your skin so you stay dry. Base layers keep you cool in the hot weather. On warmer days, you wear a base layer to stay cooler. That's the promise, at least. I agree with it, but there are others that will dispute it. So that's another way. It evaporates. Somehow the sweat evaporating off the base layer is supposed to keep to cool your body, but really sweat evaporating straight off your skin will also help keep you cooler.
Yeah.
So, and then, of course, pro riders wear base layers. So why does a pro rider wear a base layer? Other than the fact that sometimes they're paid to do that because they're pro riders. But there's some merit to this, okay? You're going to see it a lot. I think it's a great thing. I wanted to bring it up on the Mechanical Minute because I think it's something that is very important, and we should all look at the reasons to wear a base layer. I also have in here a little piece, and this is from Matt Phillips from Bicycling Magazine, and he says, I almost never ride without a base layer. If you're not yet a convert, hear me out. He said, I am a world champion sweater, and I get chilled easily. From my house at 6,500 feet, this guy lives in the mountains.
Oh, that's the other thing. I'm also a world champion sweater.
Yeah, you are. You are. So anyway, from his house at 6,500 feet, he can ride over an 11,000-foot pass and down again through variable temperatures and weather conditions. A base layer prevents him from getting waterlogged on the way up and goosebumps on the way down. Lycra jerseys tend to trap moisture, and a base layer lifts the clammy fabric off the skin, and you can stay dry and happy. So beyond moisture management, a base layer has a few other comfort-related perks. It buffers against itchy seams, bib straps that chafe, and renders a see-through jersey opaque. And then he also says that he admits that in extreme heat, he does forego one. But on most rides, the right base layer makes this sweat-prone rider a lot more likely to keep pedaling. So anyway, base layers. That's what we're going to talk about with our Mechanical Minute. I think it's a good idea. If you have any opinions on it, we'd love to hear it. You can let us know at the Facebook page, Bicycle Talk Facebook page. You can also write me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Love to hear how you feel about base layers. So moving from there, we're going to talk about healthy winter eating tips for cyclists. Fran was definitely going to jump in on this one. So this is a piece that I read from Bicycle Times magazine. There's a piece, they just have some very basic suggestions. They all make a lot of sense, but number one on the list, and this is a big one, avoid too many comfort foods. So you know what they are, you crave them. They're sweet, they're salty, they're comfort foods. They make you feel good when you eat them.
What are some specific comfort foods?
Well, anything like candy bars are comfort foods, and snacks like potato chips are comfort foods. Macaroni and cheese is a comfort food.
Okay.
There are things like that. What do you have on your list of comfort foods?
Well, I don't know if that matters as much as what are they talking about? Don't eat much comfort, because people are comforted by various things.
Right. They're looking. I mean, the visual here. I'm looking at donuts.
Oh.
I'm looking at I'm looking at pastries. Lots of things that you might find at a local bake shop or coffee shop, which sells this sort of item. Those also qualify as comfort foods. A lot of them have a sugary glaze on them, so they're going to be comfortable, I guess, is what you're looking at. So anyway, this is what they are working on. Number two on the list, this is a Fran favorite. I never, ever hear this from Fran. Eat more fruits and veggies. Why, Fran? Why do we want to eat more fruits and veggies?
Oh, because you get the most bang for your buck and the least amount of calories for your buck. You're getting a lot of nutrition. One of the things you want to do in the wintertime is you want to rebuild. So and this is a time of year because when you're in your high season, your nutrition is going towards supporting your rides, supporting your workouts. So supporting your rides while you're riding in them. Mm-hmm. If you need something that has a lot of carbs in it, because that's going to make you go faster, you're going to eat that. And you're probably going to be able to burn that off, and you're going to probably be able to sustain that without gaining too much weight. Having said that, we know a lot of chubby cyclists. Talented cyclists.
Yes, we do.
In the summer, you're going to be able to sustain more high calorie foods during your rides. And if you're riding, 150, 200 miles a week, and you're incorporating some intervals in there, you can be able to eat more than you can eat this time of year. It also depends on what you're doing this time of year. But most of us don't ride at the level this time of year that we ride during the year.
Right. So the danger zone here is that you're having a great riding season.
Yeah.
You feel great. You're fit. You look at food and you just want to eat it. And then it doesn't really make a difference. You just go out the next day. You ride again. You're having a great time. You're an incinerator for food when you're riding your bike a lot.
Well, not everybody. Most people aren't incinerators.
Well, but for the most part, you will, even if you are not an incinerator food, you're still consuming far more calories when you're very active on your bicycle than when you're not very active on your bike. The problem is that your brain sets to that idea, and then it gets cold, it gets snowy, it gets rainy, you hang the bike up, you decide that it's more interesting to watch cycling videos than it is to go out and ride your bike, and you go grab another bag of chips and you sit down on the couch and you watch your favorite cycling videos, and there's a growth that happens when you do that. And so, you have to be really careful of that transition, because, boy, it'll catch up with you and it'll hit you hard. Now, if you're a firm believer and follower of Pedalin' Ron's indoor cycling classes and you follow me into the gym, then you can still keep a certain level of activity up, but you still have to make adjustments, because
right,
that 1 hour in the gym on the fitness bicycle is not 4 hours on the road.
That's right.
So, or that nice long, 3 or 4 hour mountain bike ride that you've been going on all summer long, and then now it's the trails have become too icy and you don't want to deal with that or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you do have to make those adjustments.
So you definitely have to scale back. So yes, yep, Eating more produce is a really good idea. So like I said, during the year, you're eating to your to, you're playing to your workout, and you're trying to do the best you can with maintaining your muscle mass and eating enough carbs so that you have good energy to ride, but not so much that you gain a lot of weight, and you can manage that more, and your hunger tells you what to do. This time of year, you know, you've gotten into the practice of eating all that food, and then it's really tough because when are you, you're the fittest in August, and around here, we're the fittest in August and September.
Right.
And those are our last, generally when our last epic rides. For some people, it's October, but for most people, it's August and September are their last epic rides,
mm-hmm.
and they're eating for those epic rides.
Oh, absolutely.
And then,
yeah.
then all of a sudden it gets cold, and you've got the eating season problem. So you're already eating for your long rides, and then the eating season happens, and you keep eating. And, you know, certainly in October is when I start to scale back in terms of my riding. And, you know, I scale back in my training late October into November, December.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get into winter training come January. And you definitely have to scale back. So if you eat more fruits and vegetables have a lot of water in them. They have a lot of antioxidants, and they help with a lot of repair. So really, in the wintertime, going a little bit lower carb, if you can get away with it, and increasing your protein and produce is a really good idea. Because the protein is going to help you build up your muscle mass. Because when you're doing a lot of cardio, your body's just looking for whatever it can look for fuel. And you're going to burn away some of the protein. You can't help. You're not just going to burn fat when you're on your bike in the winter, in the summer, but you're also going to burn away some of the protein that your muscles are sustaining. So the wintertime is a really good time to eat that extra protein, drop your carbs because you're not looking for performance as much as rebuilding. You're rebuilding muscle and you're building your cardio base,
mm-hmm.
so your performance doesn't matter as much. And so, like, if you're in spin class, you're not, you know, bolting ahead of somebody unless you're that competitive. And
you should have seen the class this morning. We did a lot of bolting.
Yeah. Right. Yes, I know. And are they looking at each other's gears to see what gear they're in?
No, it's not that way.
You could get to that point, but that would be ridiculous.
You could.
But, you're in a position where you're trying to rebuild your muscle mass, or you should be anyway, by doing some resistance training and doing some intervals on the spin bike to rebuild muscle. And at the same time, it's a good idea to eat extra high-quality protein. And then to get your energy and your carbs, what you want to focus on is produce, because the produce, the fruits and vegetables that you eat, are going to be high in antioxidants, and they're going to help with that rebuilding, and that's what you'll get your good energy from. And you're not going to need the sustained bursts from a lot of starchy foods. That starchy foods are helpful when you're on the bike because they give you sustained energy for the long rides. Well, you're not going to be doing such long rides like that.
Right. So you have to reset. You got to kind of change your thought pattern there. So eat your fruits and veggies in the wintertime, and that's a good thing to do. As far as a healthy eating tip goes.
And ramp down the starchy carbs.
And then the other thing that's on this list is take a daily multivitamin, which is another thing that you could do.
Yeah, you could.
But, you know, if you're eating lots of fruits and vegetables, you're probably going to be doing okay as long as you're getting enough of those fruits and vegetables. And another thing on the list here is more liquid, more often.
Right.
Mm.
Well, one of the things about hydration, again, to have healthy muscles, if you want your muscles to be healthy, and if you want your brain to be healthy, and you want your circulation to be healthy, you have to hydrate. And one of the things that happens in the winter is we forget to hydrate because we don't feel our thirst as much. I mean, we feel it. You feel it sometimes because you're in a dry environment because of indoor heating, but because you're not sweating as much. I mean, I know I sweat a lot when I'm on the trainer. And at that time, of course, I drink lots of water. In fact, there was that one training session where I actually started to cramp, and I had to send you out of the room to get me another water bottle.
Right.
Like, I drank 4 water bottles in an hour and a half,
right.
And I actually had to add an electrolyte tab to it.
Well, you know, in a 40-minute spin class, the classic 40-minute spin class, which I don't teach, but in a classic 40-minute spin class, the recommendation from Mad Dog Athletics is 40 ounces of liquid before, during, and after.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something to consider. You want to drink early. You want to drink often, even if you're not thirsty. Your body likely needs the fluids, and even better, find a light electrolyte drink and to keep your sodium and potassium levels up through the day, especially if you worked out in the morning or you're planning to in the evening.
Yeah, and everybody's different as to how much electrolyte they lose in their sweat. So some people are like, well, I just have water in my bottle, and I'm looking at them, how can you do that? And the answer is they may be able to, because, again, everybody's different in how much electrolyte they lose. Some people are salty sweaters and some are less so. And I am definitely a salty sweater. And I should probably be drinking. That's probably part of the problem. That may be one of the reasons I have so much trouble drinking plain water. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't like the taste of the plain water, but my electrolyte balance is probably off.
Yeah.
And I would do well to drop a Noon or some electrolyte tab into my water and drink it that way.
Well, Doc, maybe you should research this.
Yeah.
And so, see, you're the scientist in the family, so.
Well, I do definitely know that when I drink coconut water, I feel better instantly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and not everybody does that, but I think that has to do with how I process fluid in my body and the electrolytes. And I do recommend coconut water. I really like it because it has a little bit of carbohydrate in it, has a lot of potassium. And so the potassium is really good for calming your muscles. If you have sore muscles, it'll help to calm them down. It'll help to calm you down. And the potassium and the carbohydrate together will help you absorb that fluid quickly. That
sure.
It's a really great way to hydrate quickly. I usually have coconut water in my water bottle. It's not 100%. Like I put maybe 4 ounces, 2 to 4 ounces of coconut water in with everything else that's in there.
All right. So the next thing on my list here. Moving on from winter and food and the whole eating issues.
Wait,
we deal
there's
with.
A yummy carrot butternut squash ginger soup here.
Yeah, I know. That's all right. You can make that for us tonight. How's that?
Also, I saw on TV there was this great Milanese minestrone. Oh, can we have Milanese minestrone?
And you have a recipe for me, right?
I'll get you a recipe for Milanese minestrone.
Right. You know how it works. I'll cook for the queen, but I need to have a recipe in front of me. Ah, yes, folks, I cook for the queen, and she loves it.
And I work for the king.
Yeah, don't we all? Anyway, next, how to stay motivated this winter. So motivation in the wintertime, that can be a tough thing because we look at, okay, the cold temperatures come in, we got snow on the ground, not enough snow to ski in, not enough snow to snowshoe in. But we still need to get out. We still need to move around. We want to get maybe a little fresh air. So here's the trick. This is a big one. This is a Franny special. Make a training schedule and stick to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about here. So anyway, you make that training schedule and you stick to it, you know. And if your training schedule is, you know, 2 or 3 times a week, then that's what it is. If it's 5 times a week, that's what it is. I try not to look at training schedules in a manner of how many miles I'm doing. Like sometimes people get a little obsessed about their miles in the summertime and they have to go out and they have to do 100 miles a week, 200 miles a week, 300 miles, whatever it is that they have to. I like to take that whole theory and throw it out the door. Go by hours. Go by hours instead, because hours can be spent either long or hard or easy. But hours are hours. So you want to try to get the hours out there. You want to try to think about your training schedule in an hourly basis. So if you were riding, and this is the way I look at it, when I am riding my bicycle, and I'm riding my bicycle in the summertime, I am probably riding somewhere between 10 and 12 hours a week. That's usually what it turns into. So if you're going in the wintertime, and the wintertime it's starting to get a little bit colder out, and you don't want to work out quite as much, maybe you want to reduce your hours. You know, maybe you want to bring it down to 6 or 7 hours a week, or maybe 5 or 6 hours a week. So there's a you know, I look at, I mean, when you make that training schedule, don't look at it from the standpoint of, you know, I have to do this every single day or whatever. Look at it from the hourly standpoint. Maybe one day you'll work out for 2 hours instead of working out an hour each day. So look at it, your schedule, figure out what works for you.
And take breaks.
And take breaks. Absolutely. Always take a break. Breaks are good. Did we have a caller that wanted to talk?
Yeah, it was David, the Garrison Keillor of Willimantic. And
okay.
He just wanted to tell us, listen, if you want to make a really quick, easy soup, take your favorite vegetables, whichever your favorite vegetables that you would like to have in a soup, put them in a pot and just boil them.
Yeah.
And then throw in whatever seasonings you want to off the top of your head and take them all and put them in a blender. And then you have a great creamy soup. And it really doesn't require much thought or effort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Right.
Yeah.
I know I would have to be experimenting with the seasonings. I would be like throwing the seasonings in and tasting it. But I guess I could do that. You could do that from the blender. You could throw the seasonings in.
Sure.
Stir it
but
up.
You can also do it while you're cooking. And so you get a little treat as you're cooking. It's part of cooking is tasting.
Well, yeah.
You
good.
Know?
But
and
he's like, he's like making it easy by boiling the vegetables up and then throwing them in the blender. So you would be seasoning them while they're in the blender.
The other thing that I really like is I have a blending wand, which is really nice.
Right,
too.
That blending wand is awesome.
That's a beautiful thing. If you've got a big pot of vegetables going and you wanna make them creamy, you just put the wand in there and off you go. But this isn't a show about cooking. This is a show about bicycles. So let's keep going here. You're training in the wintertime. Keep it short and sweet. You don't want to spend hours and hours out in the really, really cold weather. You might want to just, you know, shorten it up a little bit and just get out, get your daylight, get your fresh air, get the things that you feel that you might need to, you know, to get that little piece of exercise in. That's
I stand corrected.
What?
You don't boil the vegetables. You broil them.
You broil the vegetables.
Broil them. Yes, you
really?
Broil the vegetables, throw some salt and pepper on them, and then you throw them in the blender. You can put a little vegetable broth. If you're vegetarian, put vegetable broth on.
Sure.
If you're not a vegetarian, you want to do chicken broth, do chicken broth.
Well, there you go.
And then season them there, and it's like no-brainer. You know how we have the no-brainer soup and then, or sorry, we have the no-brainer stir fry and the no-brainer salad?
Yeah. This is where this would fall in.
This is the no-brainer soup.
So this is the no-brainer bicycle talk food program.
Yeah.
Moving forward on winter and staying motivated, dress properly. If you are going to go outside, just make sure you dress properly. We talked about that earlier today. We talked about base layers. We talked about how important that is to keeping you warm. And it says here in this particular article that I had pulled up, and most importantly, believe in yourself. Winter is a challenging time for all cyclists, no matter your skill level or goals for the upcoming spring and summer seasons. Take a chance to embrace the challenge and fear of working out when it's cold outside. So, you know, things to look at, just things to look at. It's not a bad idea. You can still get out. I know it's cold. If you have, you know, the proper equipment, if you have the proper clothing, a fat bike is a lot of fun in the wintertime. You know, you can ride them in a lot of different places. Even a mountain bike with some studs on it, you can ride in some amazing places when you have studded tires on your bike. So, and then there's another piece here, which I pulled down, which was 5 reasons to ditch the trainer and ride outside this winter. And here it is. This is more talk of getting outside. And I know I'm an advocate for riding inside because I hate being cold. I will admit it. I hate being cold. I can't keep my hands and my feet warm. And I have tried a number of different things, and hands and feet are always a problem. Although there is a lovely product out there called Bar Mitt, which works just miracles on keeping your hands warm. So I think the hand problem I probably have solved. The foot problem, no, I have not. And they make winter booties, and there's warmers you can put inside your shoes, and there's wonderful covers you can put on your shoes. But boy, the feet just don't really ever cut it in the wintertime. I've also, you know, have with age, I've become a little more wimpy than I used to be.
I understand it. Yeah, and also, there is something to be said for changing it up. We don't live in San Diego, and one of the things you know about when people ride and live in California or in places where it's warm all year, the season never changes. So there's no off season.
Yeah.
And one of the things we
Must
do
be nice.
Right. And one of the things we do when there's an off season is we do different things.
Mm-hmm.
We do, we just haven't been getting good snow around here.
No,
in order for
haven't.
Us to get good snow, we would have to travel north.
Right. But we could go for a hike.
Yes.
You know, we could go out, and I know people who do that. They'll
right.
go out and they'll go for a hike for a couple of hours. And that's a good thing you can do too.
Right.
Which works. So here you have it. Cold air is invigorating and intensifies the benefit of exercise.
That's true.
So, you know, get out and go for a walk. You know, just because you're a cyclist doesn't mean you can't walk.
Right.
Okay? That's not a bad idea. It's a good thing. You can get out there and do that. If you're feeling lethargic and you're feeling like, you know, you want to just curl up on the couch and it would be a great plan, step outside for a little while. You know, go for a walk. Go do that. If you have a dog, obviously you're going for a walk every day, I would think. So you might have, or borrow your friend's dog or your neighbor's dog. Take it out for a walk.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in borrowing the dog.
Yeah, borrowing the dog, mm-hmm. right. So being outside also helps prevent and treat seasonal affective disorder.
Oh, yes.
Right. So you want that sunlight. You want that vitamin D. You want to, you know, keep yourself happy. And, you know, my sister and I were having this conversation the other night as we were going to a basketball game. And she was talking about how difficult winter can be because she has issues with, you know, falling into that seasonal depression problem.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do.
Yeah.
A lot of people do. If you live in San Diego, I know you guys don't understand, but that's okay. You live in a very nice warm place and good for you.
I know, and I was supposed to be in Florida last week.
But we don't. We live up here in the cold Northeast, and you know what? It'll make you stronger, both mentally and physically, if you just get outside.
Yeah.
Sometimes
it's been a rough
you gotta
winter.
Just bite the bullet, get out there, and do it. Now, riding outside on the roads up here in the Northeast this time of year can be a little trickier, especially if we do have snow on the sides of the road. Our roads get a little narrower, and cars and trucks are not used to seeing us out there, so we have that problem. And then we also have the icing conditions where, you know, water will actually flow from the snowbanks on the side of the road, get out into the road, and if it gets cold enough, you'll have an ice patch and you'll freeze.
Yeah.
You'll hit black ice, and let me tell you, you have not fallen off your bike quickly until you hit a patch of black ice, and boy, do you go down quick. So you got to watch out for that. But, you know, if you can get out and do it, that's great. If you can get out on a trail, like, you know, again, I'll put a big shout out to Fat Bikes. Fat Bike on a rail trail with a little bit of snow on the top, good times. That would be a lot of fun. And, you know, it's not as prohibitive as you may think, but I don't have the gear, but I don't have a fat bike. There's a whole litany of excuses you can make for not riding outside in the cold and the snow, but there are a lot of easy solutions, provided that, you know, if you're willing to think outside the box a little bit. And we go back to the silly thing like, you know, go for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bad idea. I know some people run. Some people don't like to run. Some cyclists really don't like to run. And I understand that, too. You don't need specific gear to get out there. You just need to, really what you need to do is just open the door, step outside, and go. And that is it. I have a few things that I will table for next week because I'm looking at my time and we're going to miss out on some good comments for next week. But we will bring them up. We have a few things on our calendar coming up, which should be mentioned. Upcoming events, we have the National Bike Summit in Washington, D.C., March 5th through the 7th. You can check that out at bikeleague.org/summit. So that is a big event in Washington, D.C. And if we go on from there, there is a New England Bike Walk Summit, April 26th through the 27th in Boston, Massachusetts. You can find out more about that by going to 10times.com/NEBWS. And you can check out, there's panel talks and other things from all sorts of question and answers from municipal officials, biking and walking advocates, and industry leaders. That is coming up on April 26th and 27th. The Bike Walk Connecticut .org summit, and that is April 6th from 8:30 to 5 p.m. in Hartford, Connecticut at the Lyceum. And you can check out that at bikewalkct.org. National Bike to Work Week. Yeah, I'm going to start mentioning it now. I'm already on it. I think we need to pay real close attention to this. Remember, May is National Bike Month, and the National Bike to Work Week will be May 14th through the 18th. Bike to Work Day is on May 18th. My name is Pedlin Ron, and you've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, and you can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you'd like to contribute to or be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedlin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.